BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at bcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk as we take a look at President Donald Trump on his first overseas visit as president. First stopping in Saudi Arabia to meet with its king, the Saudi royal family, then with leaders of the Gulf Coalition and also the Muslim world. Yesterday it was to Israel and now Rome today. So what is the significance of this visit to Israel? How does the Israeli government now view a new administration in Washington? How do the Israeli people view this? Will we see peace brokered in the Middle East? Well, we're going to Israel right now as we're speaking with David Rubin, the former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. He's the founder and president of Shiloh Israel Children's Fund. As you remember, listeners, that was established to heal the trauma of terror victim children after he and his three-year-old son were seriously wounded in a terror attack. He's the author of five books, including The Islamic Tsunami and his latest, More Sparks from Zion. His websites are ShilohIsraelChildren.org and DavidRubinIsrael.com. David, thanks for joining us today here on Crosstalk.
Well, thank you, Jim. Good to be with you again.
And let me begin by saying Happy Jerusalem Day to you and to those in Jerusalem and Israel today.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And thank you. You know, and I wish everyone out there and all of your listeners who celebrate with us a very wonderful Jerusalem Day.
And before we move on, just tell us, what is the significance of this day for those unaware of what happened 50 years ago?
Well, exactly 50 years ago, according to the Hebrew calendar, and on the the general calendar was June, first week of June of 1967, but we go according to the Hebrew calendar, so it is exactly today, and we celebrate the reunification of Jerusalem. We celebrate the Six-Day War of 1967, when all of the Arab nations were perched on Israel's borders, all the Arab nations that border Israel, Egypt, Syria, Lebanon, and Jordan. And they were promising to drive the Jews into the sea, and they did everything in their power to do so. But the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had different plans. Mm. And yes, Israel fought valiantly, but I know who was in charge there. And
absolutely.
And as a result of that war, we recaptured Eastern Jerusalem, which is really historic Jerusalem, Eastern Jerusalem, where the old city is, where the Western Wall is, where President Trump just visited, where the Temple Mount is, which is the holiest place in Judaism, where the two temples once stood. It's actually the cradle of Judeo-Christian civilization, and so we recaptured all of those areas in the Six-Day War. We also recaptured Judea, which is the region south of Jerusalem, and Samaria, which is the region north of Jerusalem, as well as the Golan Heights, the Sinai Desert, the Gaza Strip. And a couple of those areas have been given to the Arab nations as a result of peace deals. Most of those areas, and specifically Judea and Samaria and Eastern Jerusalem, remain in our hands, and we celebrate that on Jerusalem Day.
And today, again, on the Hebrew calendar, is indeed Jerusalem Day. David, let's talk about that visit of President Trump to Israel. We'll talk about some of his other visits in that region there as well. But on all accounts, to the viewer, Prime Minister Netanyahu welcomed him with very open arms as he arrived in Tel Aviv. Was this a new day between these two nations?
Oh, clearly. Clearly, the warmth and the warmth, the feeling of cooperation that exists right at the start of the Trump administration is, you know, it just stands in sharp contrast to what has been for the past 8 years under Obama, which were very cold and hostile years towards Israel. And Obama's affinities clearly were with the Islamic world and not with Israel when it came to the Middle East. And, you know, even going back further, going back to the Bush administration and the Carter, I mean the Clinton administration before that, Carter, there hasn't been that warmth that we seem to have at the start of the Trump administration. And yes, I know that there was the issue of Jerusalem and recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital, and there are many people in Israel who are disappointed that President Trump hasn't fulfilled that campaign promise yet. But nonetheless, the warmth is definitely there, and the desire to cooperate is definitely there. Mm-hmm. And President Trump's understanding of the threat from Islamic fundamentalism is also there and was expressed on this visit and was expressed even in Saudi Arabia.
Now, earlier you made a reference to President Trump visiting the Western Wall. This is the first time a sitting U.S. president has done so. How significant was that visit?
Well, it is significant for the simple reason that no sitting president has done that. And, you know, President Trump made Israel a central part of his first foreign, you know, overseas trip, and that's big. And then to come to the Western Wall, which has become quite a symbol in Judaism, even though it's only the retaining wall of the Temple Mount where the two holy temples stood, but it has become a center of prayer, and it has become a powerful symbol of the Jewish return to the land of Israel. So he was there. He was there with his daughter Ivanka and her husband Jared Kushner and his wife Melania, and they were there, and they came and they prayed there, and he was given the president was given a description by a couple of rabbis who were there in the old city of Jerusalem, and he was given a historical description. And it was presented with his own Tanakh, his own Bible of Israel, and he was very gracious and seemed to really be moved by the visit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you contrasted this, of course, to the Obama tour. I mean, that first world tour he took was an apology tour, apologizing basically to Muslim nations, Arab nations, about the United States and so forth. We did not hear that come from President Donald Trump. One thing also, and you pointed out, we did not hear him say while in Israel about, you know, moving the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. This was really a hallmark of his campaign. Are you surprised that no mention was made of this?
Well, I'm not surprised because word had come out that it wasn't going to be happening. There were voices in his administration that were speaking about this. They made several comments. There was, you know, one lower level official apparently in the State Department who made a public statement about the Western Wall not being part of Israel or being part of the West Bank, ridiculously. You know, as if it's you know, there's nothing more central in Judaism. You ask any Jew who's biblically disconnected, you know, and you know, not to mention Jews who are connected, who pray three times a day, wherever they are in the world, facing Jerusalem. You ask a Jew who is disconnected from Judaism, who doesn't understand the magnificent biblical heritage that Israel has and presented to the world, and you ask that Jew. And he will, if you ask him to tell you about one symbol of Judaism, he will mention either Passover or the Western Wall. Hmm. You know, and that is the Western Wall is so central. And Jerusalem, you know, is something that Israel could never give up on. So apparently the president has gotten some bad advice from certain places, and I'm sure that there has been heavy pressure from the Muslim world. In fact, I know there's been heavy pressure from the Muslim world on the president. And so he kind of took a step back from his campaign promise. I hope that he will follow through on it at some point soon. I know there are certain members of his administration who would like to see him do so.
As you review his visit in Israel, and he's off in Rome now today, but what do you find, David, to be the most noteworthy aspect of this visit? Was it his solidarity with Israel or something else?
Well, the solidarity with Israel is something that should be kind of, it really should be taken for granted, because there's tremendous kinship between our two countries. There's a tremendous kinship in terms of values and the Judeo-Christian heritage that, you know, traces itself all the way back to Moses on Mount Sinai, even further, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We certainly have that in common. And then, of course, there are the real modern strategic issues, such as the intelligence sharing, the tremendous amount of intelligence that Israel shares with the United States and does so willingly and happily, the military cooperation that, you know, much of which isn't spoken about publicly. And so all of this has been going on for years. We have tremendous common bond, and so that relationship should have been almost taken for granted. President Obama didn't appreciate it, though, and for 8 years we had a very, very difficult relationship. So I think that Israelis, when President Trump was elected, took a deep breath, a deep sigh of relief, and at first we were extremely optimistic. Some Israelis, you know, were acting like the Messiah had come, and he's in, you know, sitting in Washington in the White House. So I think it was a little bit exaggerated.
Yeah, I do too.
Because you have to take into account that there are going to be these internal pressures, external pressures, and President Trump, you know, is really just learning. He's a brilliant businessman, but tremendous executive and manager, but he's learning a lot. He's learning how Congress works. He's learning how Washington works, and he's learning how the Middle East works as well. And hopefully he'll get the right advice, and we'll come to the right conclusions at the right time.
David Rubin, our guest here today on Crosstalk, former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. His website, ShilohIsraelChildren.org, and DavidRubinIsrael.com. Rubin is spelled R-U-B-I-N. A quick break here, and then we're going to come back and talk about the meeting with the Saudi king, and we're going to talk about Iran. We're going to be talking about Mahmoud Abbas and related issues as well. So don't go away. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, down in Antarctica, how long did it take for the ice and snow to accumulate?
Chris, evolutionists are fond of saying that the huge ice sheets on Antarctica and Greenland took a very long time to accumulate. But the evidence indicates otherwise. Over the years, several research stations have been built on the Antarctic glacier, but they keep getting covered by snow. On average, about 5 feet accumulates each year. Before long, they were so far under the ice and snow that they were unusable. One being built now is built on stilts so it can be raised up as snow rapidly accumulates. The idea of slow ice and snow accumulation proving the old earth and disproving scriptural chronologies is itself false. The Bible says that creation occurred not very long ago, and the evidence supports that idea. Chris, we need to all go back to Genesis for our starting point.
This is Chris O'Brien. Thanks for going back to Genesis.
You're listening to Crosstalk, coming your way from VCY America. We're talking about President Trump's visit to Israel, and how about going right to Israel, where David Rubin is with us tonight. I say tonight because it's into the evening hours now, nighttime hours, as Jerusalem Day has begun in Israel, celebrating the victorious Six-Day War. And certainly we can see the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that provided the victory. And the very existence of Israel continues to be a miracle. I mean, if you look at all that's taken place and the enemies and opposition and the nations that have risen up against her, it is very obvious that the hand of God has been upon this nation. David has a couple of websites you're invited to check out. ShilohIsraelChildren.org. That's ShilohIsraelChildren.org. And DavidRubinIsrael.com. David, as we're talking about this, the president had visits as well with the Saudi king. He met with the royal family. Do you believe that this visit that he has made to the region is going to yield a greater cooperation between Israel, the United States, and Saudi Arabia against nations like Iran?
Well, I think it can only help. It's good to have the president on board. That cooperation, the silent, passive cooperation, has been there for a while. Nobody talks about it, of course. The Saudis could never say publicly that they have cooperation with Israel, because they're kind of, just as Israel is a symbol of Judaism, they are a symbol of Islam. And they're the center of the holy Islamic sites and all that stuff. So they can't. If the king of Saudi Arabia would announce that he's cooperating with Israel, he probably wouldn't be alive 1 week later. So it's definitely a problem. But they want to stay in power. So they realize that Iran is a common enemy of Israel and Saudi Arabia, as well as the United States. So they see the terrorism that Iran is spreading around the Middle East and around the world, and they want to have a good relationship with the United States. And Saudi Arabia, in addition to that, realizes that Israel is their only serious partner if they want to stop the Iranian nuclear program.
Yeah, $110 billion arms deal.
Well, they're getting a lot of arms. It doesn't mean that they know how to use it so well. You know, Israel gets arms, and then we put our technology to work. We put our Jewish brains to work, and we improve the technology even further. So, but they realize that, yes, they have weapons, and they have a lot of wealth, but if they want to have a real partner in defeating Iran, so they have to work together with Israel, whether they want to or not, whether they publicly can or can't. And now, as opposed to the Obama years, there is a partner in Washington that is happy to bring us together and to help us to stop the Iranians from their evil intentions.
Yeah, here's an interesting statement from President Trump. He said this. He said, Iran's leaders routinely call for Israel's destruction. He was reading that from the teleprompter. And then the Times of Israel reports he departed from his prepared text and added this. He said, not with Donald J. Trump, believe me. And we understand there were cheers, a standing ovation, just strong solidarity with Israel, something, as we mentioned, not seen during that Obama administration.
That's right. That's right. President Trump gets it as far as understanding the Islamic threat. Of course, he can't say the Islamic threat these days. He has to show that he's just talking about the jihadist parts of Islam. I don't have such a problem. I'll tell you very clearly that jihad is central to Islam. And while I say very clearly that not all Muslims are terrorists, and probably a minority of Muslims are terrorists, but virtually every terrorist is a Muslim. And there is obviously a reason for that.
Yes, and
that's to do with the ideology.
And matter of fact, folks, tomorrow on Crosstalk, it is our plan to go even further into that. The very thing David just mentioned there, Usama Dakdak is scheduled to be with us today as we examine what's taken place, a tragedy again, Manchester, England, and we'll be delving into that. President Trump also said this, David. He said, Iran must never be allowed to possess a nuclear weapon. Quite an important statement that came from his mouth.
For sure. Unlike anyone else who may make such a statement, I believe that the president is serious about it.
Yeah.
And I think he's willing to do what he can to help to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Now, comment on the new, we had just elections take place. We saw elections in Iran. Rouhani reelected. Your comment on that, what significance is that as it impacts Israel?
NBD, no big deal.
Okay.
Virtually anyone who would come to power in Iran at this time can only come to power with the approval of the Ayatollahs, the religious forces for Islamic fundamentalism and extremism and jihad. So Rouhani, is just another Islamic extremist. He believes in exporting the Islamic revolution, and he's no different than anyone else. And you know, his competitors, who were running against him in the elections, they're not any better. And anyone who comes to power, you have to realize that the real force of power is that committee of Ayatollahs that sits in Tehran and that makes all the decisions.
Now, earlier, President Trump had stood side by side with Mahmoud Abbas in Bethlehem, and he said, quote, "Our society can have no tolerance for this continuation of bloodshed. We cannot stand a moment longer for the slaughter of innocent people." He was talking about what happened in Manchester, but he called terrorists evil losers. And I thought, isn't that kind of ironic that such a statement was said with Abbas standing by?
Well, the president also, to his credit, was quite explicit in pointing out that Abbas has to stop all of the incitement towards terrorism through the educational system that's run by the Palestinian Authority in their autonomous areas. And he also pointed out very clearly that all payment of terrorists has to be stopped. And he didn't say publicly, "Mr. Abbas, I want you to stop all of those payments that you've been making to terrorists through the Palestinian Authority all through these years." He didn't say that explicitly, but everyone understood what he was talking about.
Doesn't Abbas honor jihadis who slaughter Jews? I mean, name streets
well,
or areas?
I call him Mahmoud Jihad Abbas.
Jihad Abbas.
Mahmoud Jihad Abbas. Mm-hmm. It's not really his middle name, but that's what I call him, because he believes in jihad. He supports jihad, which, by the way, for those of you listeners who don't know, means holy war against all non-Muslims. It doesn't mean, you know, as you may hear a Muslim spokesman occasionally on television or radio saying, it doesn't mean holy war. It really means internal self-reflection of the Muslim. Yeah, right, like indigestion, internal self-reflection. What we're talking about is holy war against all non-Muslims, and that is the issue here, and that's what needs to be stopped. But Mahmoud Abbas and his Palestinian Authority, which basically consists of three terrorist organizations, Fatah, which is his terrorist organization, the Hamas, which is ensconced in Gaza, and the Islamic Jihad, that Palestinian Authority has been promoting terrorism, has been financing terrorism, paying terrorist salaries, and has been doing that for about 15 years. And Abbas is the main financier. And mind you, he is an equal opportunity employer. He doesn't just employ the Fatah terrorists. He also gives salaries to the Hamas terrorists, to the Islamic Jihad terrorists, to ISIS terrorists, and any other Islamic terrorist who kills a Jew.
David Rubin is with us today, folks. His websites are shilohisraelchildren.org, shilohisraelchildren.org, and davidrubinisrael.com. A reminder that Rubin is spelled R-U-B-I-N, davidrubinisrael.com. You can learn more about his books and also his outreach there. David Abbas said that the freedom and independence of the Palestinian people is the key to peace and stability in the world. And then he outlines his goal of a two-state solution along the borders of 1967 with its capital as East Jerusalem. Prime Minister Netanyahu stressed again this past Sunday, Jerusalem will always be the capital of the Jewish state. Your thoughts? I think it's very interesting, especially as we're celebrating Jerusalem Day and the Jerusalem coming back here, the unified Jerusalem, and here he's pushing it to go back to the borders of 67, and he's in essence saying that's what's going to bring peace to the region.
Well, because he was coming here the day before Jerusalem Day, I had high hopes that he was actually going to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, despite the reports that were coming out from Washington. But okay, it didn't happen. We already discussed that, and mm-hmm. and it may still happen in the near future. Hopefully,
We did not hear President Trump talk about a two-state solution, did we? He spoke of peace, but not a two-state solution ever.
No, he did not mention two-state solution, and I don't think that was an accident. Look, he's a smart businessman. I think that he understands the concept that you cannot keep trying a failed solution over and over again and expect it to work. It just doesn't happen. You know, there was a peace plan that has been tried over and over. Jerusalem, as the giving Eastern Jerusalem to these so-called Palestinians for an independent state, and giving them Judea and Samaria. I mean, that has been tried over and over again and discussed over and over again, and it fails every time. So why keep trying the same solution? Why not try some creative solutions? And I've laid out my peace plan in my book Peace for Peace, which of course, as you mentioned, people can find out more about at davidrubinisrael.com. And what I propose in that peace plan is two basic principles. One is total Israeli sovereignty over Judea and Samaria and all of Jerusalem, all of the areas currently in Israel's hands. And I also propose a path to loyal citizenship for all of the residents of Judea and Samaria and Jerusalem. And that really is the key to a successful peace plan, because the peace plans that have been bounced around for years, they're going nowhere. They're dead on arrival, because they always talk about dividing Jerusalem and dividing the land of Israel between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. It's not going to work.
David Rubin, our guest here today on Crosstalk. Our number is 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. If you'd like to speak with him about the president's visit and some of the ramifications of also his visit with the Saudi king and with others there as well. We'll be right back.
Israel is constantly in today's news. Did you know that Israel stretches only 263 miles from north to south, and its width ranges from 71 miles at its widest point to only 9 miles at its narrowest point? Yet a growing number of nations continue to denounce the existence of Israel. In the book, Israel Under Fire, authors Jimmy DeYoung and John Ankerberg review the Bible prophecies concerning Israel's future, the nations that will come against Israel, the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, and if peace will ever be achieved in the Middle East. The book also reports on plans now underway for rebuilding the Jewish temple on the Temple Mount and guides the reader through the book of Revelation. Israel Under Fire shows just how important it is to know what the Bible says about Israel's future and why it matters to you. Israel Under Fire is available for a donation of $17 to VCY America and can be obtained by calling 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. We're talking about the presidential visit to Israel today. We're speaking with David Rubin, who is in Israel. It's Jerusalem Day. And by the way, his website, ShilohIsraelChildren.org, ShilohIsraelChildren.org, and DavidRubinIsrael.com. We have open phone lines here today where you can speak to Mr. Rubin as to this visit and the significance and its impact. Our number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. President Trump said, quote, "We love Israel, we respect Israel, and I send your people the warmest greetings from your friend and ally, all of the people of the United States of America. We are with you." It's a sentiment that's been absent for the previous 8 years and now has returned, recognizing the very strategic and important ally and friend that Israel is to the United States. We're taking your calls here today on Crosstalk, and let's begin with John, who is calling from the state of Colorado. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, Jim. Shalom, David.
Shalom to you.
I got a little article here I'd like to read for you. To the General Daily Paper. During the 2015 U.S. campaign, Trump mused about his belief that Islam hates us. Said that on Sunday, and this Sunday's paper, you're still there?
Yes, yeah, Islam hates us.
Right. Mm-hmm. Standing before dozens of regional leaders, he said Islam was one of the world's greatest threats. Now, is Mr. Trump two-faced, or is am I the one to set the problem? But I think there's something wrong. He's looks like to me he's on both sides of the aisle.
Okay.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you very much. Calling, he was quoting a article he had where President Trump, he said that Islam was one of the greatest faiths, and they asking is he on both sides of the fence on this issue. Your thoughts, David?
Well, publicly he seems to be. I don't think that his beliefs are on both sides of the fence. I think that that Trump, I think he understands that there is a problem with Islam. And again, he's getting a lot of advice from some of the Obama leftovers in the State Department, as well as some of his advisors, who are telling him that he, you just can't say such things about Islam. He's also concerned about his immigration plan, about his attempts to at first to halt Muslim immigration to the United States, and afterwards to halt immigration from those seven predominantly Muslim countries to the United States in order to stop that terrorism. But I think, he ran into some difficulties there, and I think he's trying to be more cautious about what he says publicly.
So
is he actually two-faced? Well, I would say publicly, yes. But I don't believe that his private beliefs have changed so much as a result of this one visit with Saudi Arabia.
We have Dave calling in from Princeton, Minnesota. Dave, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm just kind of curious. When I hear of a peace plan talk with Israel, what comes to my mind is the.
Hello, Dave. Okay, we've got a bad cell there. Okay, we lost you, Dave. So we didn't get your question there. Kenny is next in Richland. You're on the air, Kenny. Hello, Kenny. Kenny, let's go to Karen in Hartford. Karen, you're on the air.
Hi. Mr. Rubin, I'm curious to know what your opinion is as far as President Trump and Tillerman, another, being engaged in a sword dance in Saudi Arabia.
Well, I don't think that that Tillerman is playing such a major role in foreign policy. I believe that he is giving some advice, and it's difficult to tell how much advice he's actually giving to the president, and you know, who is the main influence on the president right now? You know, we'll see as time goes on. Because on one hand, you have Tillerman, who certainly had a lot of connections in the Islamic world, you know, in his previous life, so to speak. And then you have Kushner and Ivanka, who we know have strong, you know, strong Jewish beliefs, and have had an affinity with Israel in the past, and even with the settlement movement in Israel, and you have the American ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, who we know has always been a big supporter of the settlements, including the Jewish communities here in Samaria. You know, there is an interesting mix there, and I think over time it'll become clearer who has the president's ear more than the others.
So are you suggesting that Tillerman perhaps would have been involved in convincing Trump to be engaged in that sword dance? See, I find that almost appalling to see our president doing this dance alongside the Muslims who have been connected to 9/11, who, you know, support terrorism, and with a sword. I mean, that just seems like, come on, that didn't. So are you saying that I heard Tillerman talk on Fox News, and he said that wasn't his first sword dance. So are you suggesting that he perhaps says to Donald Trump, well, you know, this is good public relations?
It's very possible. It's very possible that he's the one giving that advice. You know, there are others there in the administration. There's Mattis. There are several individuals in the administration that have had strong ties in the Muslim world, in the Arab world, over the years, and possibly have been influenced by that. Clearly, I agree about the, you know, the sword dance. I mean, the sword of Islam is such a symbol, as represented in those photographs from ISIS, where they're chopping off people's heads. I don't think that's a symbol that the president really should be associated with, because I don't think it reflects his real beliefs.
Thank you, Karen.
I'm glad to hear you say that. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. I think we've reconnected with Dave in Princeton, Minnesota. Dave, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. What my question was is, when you were talking about peace plan with Israel, when I hear a peace plan, the first thing that comes to my mind is how Israel is going to make a peace plan with the Antichrist as a signer that's going to be broken, you know, halfway through the 7 years. Are you a believer in that as well? I'm just kind of curious why everybody's trying to push a peace plan that's talked about in Scripture as failing.
Well, peace plans have been spoke about now for about 40 years. And for 40 years, we've been banging our land for peace heads against the wall, you know, which is one of the reasons why I wrote my book, Peace for Peace, P-E-A-C-E, in exchange for P-E-A-C-E, because this land for peace plan can't work. And, you know, and I'll just allude to what you're referring to, which is that dividing the land of Israel is anti-biblical. And even negotiating Israeli withdrawal from the land of Israel is anti-biblical as well. So, I mean, one reason why we've always had the same peace plans and they've always failed is because they're anti-biblical and they're not based on biblical principles. But when I talk about my peace plan, which I lay out in my book Peace for Peace, which of course people can get through the website davidrubinisrael.com, in that peace plan, I make it clear that we're basing it on biblical principles and on historical precedent, and that includes. That includes, yes, there can be a path to loyal citizenship, with a stress on the word loyal, for all residents of Judea and Samaria and Jerusalem, and that includes the Arabs. But that is a real loyal citizenship with a very clear test, which I could explain in more detail if we have time. But you cannot go against the basic principle that the land of Israel was given by the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob to the people of Israel as an eternal inheritance and a trust, if you will, and it needs to be handled with care and with honor, and the main honor is to the God of Israel.
And one of the things, Dave, we just want to point out as well is the, you know, what we hear from the psalmist in Psalm 122, verse 6, is it we're told to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. They shall prosper that love thee, we're told in the scripture as well. And so we do pray for peace, and certainly there are likely different views of eschatology here amongst us, but let me say this, that there is going to be a time when the Prince of Peace is going to come and give that ultimate peace to Jerusalem as well. Thank you so much, Dave, for the call. Appreciate it. Denise in Marinette, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Oh, this is Denise from Marinette. Thank you for taking my call. Thank you, Jim, for having a great guest, Mr. Rubin. And you just were talking about my point exactly. We were able to watch it live, and I have to tell you, I almost cried when Bibi and his wife presented our president and his wife a 150-year-old Bible. And he commented very quietly, I would love to get and see if we can get a transcript on that, but I believe he turned to our president and he said, in this book, you will see that God gave the land to Israel.
Hmm.
It was so powerful. And I went to tears. I said, did you hear that? To my husband. I want to find out more about that exact moment. The Bible was in a beautiful box, and it was in their very modest home as his leadership, Bibi, and his wife. When he entered into their home on a lighter note, he turned to the president and he said, welcome to our palace. And I had a laugh because President Trump and his wife just saw the grandeur, the visible grandeur of Saudi Arabia. And then he came into this wonderful home of this wonderful man that's leading Israel. It was so impactful. We live in fascinating times. And I want to camp on every detail because to see the Lord work. I was just thrilled. So, that's my comment. I don't know how you feel, Mr. Rubin. I'd love to hear yours.
Well, I don't have any real comment on it. I also understand that the Bible of Israel is, you know, is a heritage that we passed on. That we proudly hold to, and we learn Torah all the time, but it's definitely the cradle of Judeo-Christian civilization, and it's nice that the president appreciates that.
Okay, we're back in just 15 seconds. David Rubin with us here today, ShilohIsraelChildren.org. DavidRubinIsrael.com are the websites, and we're taking your calls, 800-733-9829.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewradio.com. In October of 2016, we produced 3 one-hour television programs warning the American people about the dangers to our infrastructure, such as our national power grid. We brought on many respected experts, including Dr. Peter Pry, former CIA officer and now chairman of the EMP Commission for Congress. He warned that China and Russia have already hacked into our power grid. He also warned of North Korea and what they have available to them in regards to bringing down our infrastructure. We also have reports that Syria has hacked into our banking on the East Coast. And now we're seeing blackouts or power outages on the East Coast and parts of the West Coast. Are these hackers that are practicing, or is this a warning? It's time for Americans to wake up to the dangers of our infrastructure by terrorists. I'm Brandon House.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. David Rubin is with us, a former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. He is in Israel and giving us a perspective from Israel through the eyes of the citizens there, through the eyes of the nation there, and has great insight from that part of the world as to the important relationship between the United States and Israel. And just my mind went to a couple of interviews that we did this past August here on Crosstalk, in which the very topic was, the book was called Miracle of Israel. Gary Frazier was with us, and where he recounts Israel past, Israel present, Israel future, and certainly the promises that God made to Israel are everlasting promises. And that resource is still available through our website, through crosstalkamerica.com, or through calling our switchboard here at 800-729-9829. David has a number of books. He's referenced several times today, Peace for Peace. That is available through his website, davidrubinisrael.com. davidrubinisrael.com. Let's go back to the phone lines. We have Bill calling in from Fox Point, Wisconsin. Bill, you're on the air.
Sir, is the refusal of many liberal Americans to accept Trump's presidency a possible destabilizing force as Trump tries to implement his Israel policy?
Oh, certainly, certainly, it's a barrier, because the left in America and around the world ceased to be pro-Israel a long time ago, if they ever were. The main anti-Israel forces, the main anti-Semitism, in fact, today comes from Islamo-Nazis and lefto-Nazis, and that's where the main problem is today. As regards Israel, the leftists and the Muslims are Israel's worst enemies.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. We have Rod calling in from Ladysmith, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. This is Rod. No, I'm from Weyerhaeuser. It's up near Ladysmith. But I do listen to your program once in a while. I try to listen to every side, all stories. You know how the old saying goes, everything goes hand in hand. Now, it's just like yesterday, this mass murder in England there, and you know, first of all, they use this word taking responsibility. It's kind of silly to use that word, because if it was ISIS, they're taking the glory, not the responsibility, because they see that as a good thing. But anyhow, I'm just kind of curious. You know, I don't claim to be very intelligent, but ever since we went into Iraq, it just seems like this stuff has flourished. And you know, I don't know if I've been told that. What it is, the people of ISIS are the old Republican Guard, and we went into Iraq, and obviously they took out Saddam Hussein, which, yes, he was a bad, bad guy.
Do you have Rod, we're almost out of time. Do you have a specific question for David?
Well, the point is, I'm just saying, I always try to put my feet in somebody else's shoes. Now, you know, if I lived there and some nation came and blew my nation apart, I would be just fit to be tied. My dad's a World War II veteran.
Okay, and we don't have time, and I appreciate his service. We don't have time to go into the story, but let me ask you to put it down in just a few sentences here. David, does the U.S. involvement in Iraq and the taking down of Saddam Hussein, are we then at fault for the proliferation of ISIS that we see today, all these attacks?
Well, no, of course not, but I do think that one of the problems with taking out Saddam Hussein was that it unleashed the power of Iran. Up until that point, there was this sort of balance between Saddam Hussein and Iran. They fought each other. They were against each other. There was sort of an equivalence of power. But since Iran was broken up. Excuse me, Iraq was broken up, then it just strengthened Iran, and Iran is the undisputed power in that part of the Middle East, and they've strengthened the Shiite forces in Iraq as well.
Rod, thank you so much for the call. Karen is next in Lutzen, Minnesota. You're on the air, Karen.
Oh, hi. I want to know who you think the true Israel is.
The true Israel is the people of Israel that are descended from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the Israelites of our times are the ones living in the land of Israel, and that are the renewed sovereign nation and the chosen people in the land of Israel. And in addition to that, there are many Jews and other people around the world who are inherited, are descended from the original Israelites. Those people who stand with Israel in our times are truly people of God as well.
Thank you, Karen, for your question. And finally, George in Olney, Illinois, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. David, Jerusalem is divided into four parts, and you never hear anything about the Armenians. Could you tell me anything about them?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, the old city of Jerusalem is divided into four parts. There's the Jewish quarter, the Muslim quarter, the Christian quarter, and the Armenian quarter. And you're right, it's not mentioned that often. The Armenians lived in fear under the Muslims for many years before the rebirth of the State of Israel in our times. And the Armenians were persecuted. Armenians are basically Christians, and they were persecuted by the Muslims in the Middle East. The first Holocaust, but the precursor of the Holocaust was the slaughter of 2 million Armenians by the Turks. Not too many years before the Holocaust occurred in Germany, and Hitler looked at what was done to the Armenians, and he figured that because the world was pretty much silent when the Muslims did that to the Armenians, that he could do what he intended to do to the Jews, and he certainly did.
Thank you for that question. We are out of time. David Rubin with us tonight, right from Israel. It is tonight in Israel. And his website, ShilohIsraelChildren.org, ShilohIsraelChildren.org, DavidRubinIsrael.com. And David, thanks for carving out the time and staying up to join us for Crosstalk.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jim.
And folks, again, we remind you, as the psalmist wrote, to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.